previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I'm not sure it's Skybar. I think Skybar might be a Necco product, is it?
I don't know that. I had a Skybar yesterday.
I went to Skybar in L.A. once. It was very nice.
I had a Skybar yesterday.
Describe what a Skybar is, because a lot of people don't know that.
I don't think they're using real chocolate anymore. I don't.
I think Skybars are made up of the leftovers of the other ones.
It's got a little caramel, little nougat, little chocolate in it, little peanut butter. Yeah.
Love something like that.
It used to be great, and it's like me. It's not great anymore.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Alrighty then, we are live at Chatter, which is at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest and Jennifer Street Northwest in Friendship Heights in the District of Columbia. We're live for breakfast. We are live for breakfast every time we do the show, starting at 7 in the morning, though we start about 7:45. Barry Svrluga is here, back from the Masters. Tori Clark is here. Michael Kornheiser in very early today, which means baby boy Bootsy had a rough night. And Nigel will run the board and do the news. Tori has brought in, speaking of that opening, with Necco products. Tori, why don't you go through what you have brought in for the crew?
Well, sadly, Talbert's on River Road, which I highly recommend. For
I used to buy ice there.
Yeah, they still sell ice. They're lovely people.
In the very heat of the Washington summer, when we first here in the late 70s, early 80s, when our power would go out for a week at a time, you would go to Talbert's to buy ice.
Yep, still do. Okay. They're really lovely there. So I was happy to see that they had Chuckles.
Which I love. Yeah, not Chuckles the clown, kids. No, Chuckles.
Yeah, right. And as we said yesterday, the ingredients in Chuckles are pretty much sugar.
And sugar as an added ingredient.
On top, I love how it's congealed sugar, and then it's a little crystal sugar on top.
Fantastic. Nothing's better than Chuckles.
You'll be happy to know that your Sky Bars.
Not real chocolate,
ingredients,
I don't think.
Milk chocolate.
Oh, okay. They don't taste as good as they used to, but nothing does.
Yeah, it goes on with a lot of things I can't pronounce. And then, which should be used as adhesive in all buildings, Mary Jane's.
Mary Jane's will take your fillings out. You chew on a Mary Jane, everything's flying out. They are recommended by all dentists, orthodontists, because they take your entire teeth out. Your bridge work is gone.
Yep.
We know that that Necco is the New England candy company, right?
Is it confection company?
Confection.
But they're going out of business.
But that's why we did this, because they're going out of business.
But
we want to keep them alive.
The wafers.
Necco wafers. I love the Necco wafers. You don't know. No.
I
like
love
the chocolate ones.
Do you like eating
Again, that was the closest I ever got to Catholicism, and so I always liked them.
I challenge any of you to open a Mary Jane cleanly.
Can't be done. I think if you heat them up a little bit,
also, that
wrap will come on the candy front, from Mark in Cape May, New Jersey, you were there for me through my incarceration. I want to show you my appreciation. Closer than my peeps, you are to me. And so he sent in a box of Peeps, sour watermelon Peeps. I hate Peeps.
I'm not a fan of Peeps.
Huh?
Did he just quote Shaggy?
Yes, it's in here. That's what I read. I can't. Also, one Monopoly game piece from the Acme in Lawrenceville, New Jersey. And a Barry Bonnell card from the Braves, when Barry Bonnell played for the Braves, which is great. The Big Easy Playboys sent a whole bunch of koozies, a whole bunch of
we love
CDs.
Those guys. They're great.
So if you were here today, you'd know that you received these things. So that's very, very nice. The Peeps have to go.
I'm a Peeps fan, but those are not traditional Peeps. I like traditional yellow Peeps.
Traditional Peeps are only yellow. There are some white and some pink, but Peeps are terrible for you. Chuckles for me. Chuckles
actually are good.
So I'm picking up the paper today. This is great. I pick up the paper, the Washington Post, to prepare for the show. And on the back of the A section, there's a big ad for a Capitol Fourth. The Capitol Fourth is the free concert that you see on PBS all the time. That is actually done on the steps of the Capitol of the United States of America.
Brilliant.
Of the building.
Yes, utterly brilliant.
At the bottom of it, it actually says this. There's a picture of John Stamos, and the ad says, a full-page ad, hosted again by TV legend John Stamos. I think that's a stretch.
I don't.
You think he's a TV legend?
Well, I mean, it recently...
Legend?
I think it recently...
Who is quoted as saying, you can't get more patriotic than this. Who tried to?
Nobody did. I think it recently has been hosted by Tom Bergeron, who is not a TV legend.
But he's a competent host.
Yes, but
he does Dancing with the Stars.
Right, but he didn't have...
John Stamos is a TV legend from...
I think he
wasn't even the star of the show.
I think there are a lot of 40-something, 50-something women out there who were absolute fans. And Perry,
I'm not a fan. I just think if you're
is
my
he a legend?
age... you think he's a TV legend. Maybe Nigel disagrees.
Did you watch that show?
No, I did not watch
it. This was Full House, right?
No.
Wasn't that his show, Full House?
And they've brought it back. Isn't it Fuller House?
As Fuller House?
I mean,
by the way, Bob Saget, who I think was the star of that show.
Correct.
Right.
Who was the MC of the James Carville roast that I appeared on.
Oh.
Filthy beyond words and very funny. And by the way, sneaky big.
Yeah, he's totally
like about 6'4", big boy.
Yeah,
nice guy, but filthy.
Yeah, the first time you see his stand-up, you're like, wow, I did not see that coming.
Really?
He's got some great moments in the Gary Shandling documentary.
Which everybody who sees, and the PTI people who've seen it say it's
fantastic.
Great. So I've got to tell Isaacson that I have to watch it, but it's on HBO, is it not?
That's right.
Isaacson is getting congratulated, I mean, because people like the show so much.
Yeah, no, he's got some parts in it as well, so yeah.
So great. I'm going to begin today with two things. One is... Charlie Steiner. I get a call from Charlie Steiner, the call is always the same. He goes, "I've got takeout from a lower tower," and he hangs up the phone. So I call him back, and I say, "What?" And he says, "Well, I'm coming into town next week, and we'll have dinner with Chuck Todd and Wolf Blitzer," and I said, "Sure, I'd love to do that." And he said, "And when I'm on the road now, everywhere I go, someone comes up to me and talks about a lower tower." And there, I say, "Are they from Long Island?" He goes, no, not necessarily. And he says, and I take out my phone, and I show them the picture of the Alloa Tower thermometer, which I had right over here, which I am holding up now for people on News Channel 8 to see. And the back, the calendar from 1967. And Charlie shows them that. And I've told Charlie that Charlie gets temporary possession. When Charlie is here and we have dinner, I will give him, for temporary possession for 1 year, he can have the Alloa Tower thermometer, but I want him to bring it with him on the road to every ballpark that he goes to, and I want him to keep it with him. So I just found that the thin strand of the show is amazing to me. La Cheeserie, not as amazing as Aloha Tower.
No, that's
But it'll now that you're doing this, it'll get right up there with La Cheeserie. I mean, I've told you.
You have
this.
To yell at Charlie. Charlie's not even seen. He's in a booth. He's
Sands
is doing.
But he does walk down the street, and he is, because he had been on TV. He's not just a radio voice.
Oh, everybody knows Charlie.
You recognize him. The thing I love about talking with Charlie is like his. He's never not in that voice. That's
his voice.
I know, I love...
My friend Jody Forstad, who listens to the show, who went and graduated high school at Malvern High School with Charlie Steiner, says, Charlie had that voice at 12. He had that voice at 12.
That's so great.
It is a great voice.
It's a great voice, and it's great to just have like Charlie, you're getting ice water or iced tea here at the... Barry, it's great.
So when I did the show with Keith a few weeks ago, I didn't realize this. Keith said Charlie gave him his first job at RKO Radio. Charlie Steiner was Keith's first boss.
Wow. Really?
Of all time. Charlie's had a great career.
Absolutely. Yes.
And now he's doing the Dodgers. And the Dodgers, as they've shown you, you can leave when you want.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's like with Vin. Vin was almost 90.
Yeah.
You know?
Vin is a pretty special one. But I think Charlie's there for the ride now. I mean, it's a great job. It's a great lifestyle. You know, it's a great place. I mean,
Charlie's
he left the Yankees for that.
Charlie's a happy guy. So, I mean, I'm Charlie's my friend, so I'm happy for Charlie. I wanted to mention one thing. We did this story. This is my soapbox position. We did this story yesterday on PTI. It was our lead story. It was not a day chocked full of news, but we did this story on the draft prospects of Josh Rosen. Josh Rosen is the UCLA quarterback who was there for 3 years, who was great as a freshman, good as a sophomore, good as a junior, but not as great as he was with his debut as a freshman. And there is a whisper campaign about Josh Rosen. There are four quarterbacks at the top of the charts. There's Josh Allen from Wyoming, who seems to be everybody's darling, and there's Sam Darnold from USC, who also seems to be everybody's darling. There's Baker Mayfield, who everybody wants to attack as the next Johnny Manziel, because he's been, I guess he's publicly drunk. He's also won about 900 games.
He did the flag thing.
Yeah.
And he what was the trash talking during the bowl game?
Right. He did all of that, and he won the Heisman Trophy.
Correct.
And you can, as far as I'm concerned, if you want to knock him physically, he's not the tallest guy in the world.
Right.
But then you'd have to knock Drew Brees.
Correct.
I don't know. And Russell Wilson, I don't know that you want to do that. Anyway, and then there's Josh Rosen, for whom there is a whisper campaign that says the following stuff. He is too smart. He is too rich. and he is too arrogant. This is classic anti-Semitism. Absolutely classic anti-Semitism. We don't want this guy. This guy's too smart. Wait a second. Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees, they're really smart. Russell Wilson is really smart. There's no such thing as too smart. It makes you uncomfortable because you're dumb. All right? But there's no such thing as too smart. Too rich. What? Too rich. I don't know that he'll even be interested in the game. He's out there getting his brains kicked out in college, and he wants to play pro ball.
And that's what the other thing about too smart and too rich is he's being penalized for perhaps not a high level of commitment to football. That's what they're questioning.
Except
that's
he does have
exactly.
That. Except he does have that. He went to the highest possible school.
Correct.
No, this is anti-Semitism in its most blatant form. It's like, we don't want this guy. This is when black quarterbacks came out of college.
Yes.
This is... They're not smart, and they can't read the defense.
Well, it's Lamar.
They can't read the defense. You got to put them in another position. They're undisciplined. They're lazy. This stuff is classic stuff, and nobody wants to talk about it. And the people who engage in this and persist in this, who go on TV and say these things, are part of it. And I don't think they get it.
I think they are. It's one of those things where I do think we've moved beyond the black quarterback thing to a certain degree, except you see it happen with Lamar Jackson, right?
Well, he should be a wide receiver. He shouldn't be a quarterback.
He's a quarterback. You know. He won the Heisman as a quarterback.
He's an actual quarterback.
Deshaun Watson. Come on. Yeah. What are we doing?
Draft him as a quarterback and give him a chance. Tori has her hand up.
I do. Question. In the age of Colin Kaepernick,
yes,
as these guys are coming out of college and being considered for the draft, are people scrubbing their records and saying, what have they said that has any political...
Josh Rosen is part of that. They say, are you going to use your platform in any social or political way? Oh, you mean like LeBron James?
Yeah.
And he says, yeah, I probably have, yeah.
It is part of the NFL's kind of arrogance that we will brainwash you. We don't want anything that steps outside the norm, and I think it fits into what you're talking about with owners being uncomfortable with any of that. Which is so different from the NBA, where you know, not only LeBron and Steph Curry and people like that, but Greg Popovich is a leading... There's something about that.
Here's the difference. I mean, you can if you want to go social on me and go, you know, all Rachel on me about how great it is, you can do that. I love Rachie. But they have written in to their player agreement that you will stand for the anthem. The players accepted that.
Sure.
That's all the owners in football want now. Just do that. Just do that. Now, what are you going to give them? You got to give them something to do that. But there's far fewer people in the NBA, and they were able to get the NBA Players Association to sign off on that for all of these other things that
but
they've
got.
But more
gotten. Broadly, to Barry's point, I think you're right. I
but
think
they, in, they talk.
In football, they are not comfortable with their players having roles outside, off the
there's
field.
A very
well,
top...
they want him to be the Walter Payton Man of the Year award.
Yeah.
They want that. They want, like, J.J. Watt.
Right.
They want that.
But Malcolm Jenkins could be the Walter Payton Man of the Year.
100%.
And in a year in which J.J. Watt did not have a GoFundMe campaign for the entire city of Houston, could have and probably should have been the man of the year.
There's a difference because football is a different sport. The control of a football team is way different than the control of a basketball
team. It's control.
But I think that's a function not only of the sport, but of the fact that you got 55 people opposed to 12. I mean, in basketball...
And three important ones.
In basketball, if you get the two best players to agree with you, everybody else falls in line.
Correct.
Yeah, football, no.
Well,
yeah,
and also the head coach, with some exceptions, is almost subservient to the players in basketball.
Yes.
And in football, it can't be that way.
No.
The structure is different.
Anyway, so that's my small soapbox for the day. We'll come back with Dave Shinen, who not only is a great writer, but more importantly to us right now, has recorded an album.
It's amazing.
We need to talk about Dave Shinen's album when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there's a better way to buy, and that's with SeatGeek, and this is the SeatGeek Read. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out with friends, or need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. It says that I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. I don't. Wow. Michael does, right? Michael, you have the SeatGeek app?
I do indeed.
So, like, we... If...
That kind of means you have
it. I'm sort of like the people that questioned Mark Zuckerberg and said, so, do you belong to the Facebook? You know, I don't really know these things. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, listeners to this high-quality podcast can get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase, and all you have to do is download the SeatGeek app, and you enter the promo code Tony today. That is promo code Tony for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Nice beginning to this song.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah. I wonder who did this song. Wait, it's Dave Shinen. This is A Warm February from Shinen's big new album, First Thing Tomorrow. And Shinen joins us now. And normally I would say, let's talk baseball. We'll get to that. We'll get to that down the road. You made an album. Tell us, start at the beginning. Leave nothing out.
Oh, God.
Are they your songs? How did you do it? Where did you do it? When did you do it?
Well, they are my songs. I had about maybe 18 to 20 songs I had written over the course of about 4 years. And I have a couple of really good friends who are hardcore musicians, amazing songwriters, brilliant musicians. And, I talked to them during the course of the writing. They kind of mentored me, and we sort of picked the best 10. We went into a studio in Baltimore called Magpie Cage. We cut the record, you know, and I had these friends playing on it, guitar and bass. I play a little bit of guitar. I play enough guitar basically to be able to write on guitar. So I wrote a lot of the songs on guitar. I wrote a few of them on piano, and I played piano on the record, but I wasn't about to touch a guitar when I have these amazing musician friends who are far and away better than me to play guitar and bass. And then we have a drummer. And we cut the record over the winter in basically November and January, I guess. We kind of took a break for the holidays. And, and then it was a matter of getting it mastered, getting the graphic design work done for the online display and also for the CD manufacturing, and put it out a couple weeks ago. That's the short version.
This is fantastic. You have to understand how proud everyone is of you who knows you at all, that you actually put your own album out. You did your own songs. Were you tempted at any point to cover somebody else's songs that you really liked?
I would say no. I mean, I worked on these songs, and the one thing I did not want to do was put out a record just as a sort of vanity project. Like just because songs are written doesn't mean they deserve to be recorded and put out on a, you know what I mean? Like I wanted to make sure these songs were good enough to stand up. And so I was very cognizant of that. I mean, I didn't want to put out a record that was going to be good for a sports writer. I wanted to put out a record that was good, period. And so I made sure I had 10 really good songs before I went forward with the recording, if that makes sense.
Is there a tour? Are there appearances? Can people come and see you perform live? Or because you're out on the road doing baseball all the time or whatever else you're doing, it's not going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, there's definitely not going to be a tour. I'm not I don't have either the inclination or the ability really to organize any kind of structured touring situation, because number one, like, that's not what interests me. I'm not interested in performing, and I mean, I like the creating. But number two, with my job, yeah, it would be just hard to commit to any kind of schedule. I mean, we have talked about doing one show, a sort of record release show, even though it's going to be probably months after the actual release date, just because, you know, trying to get schedules together. And so that's still up in the air. I mean, I'll let you know. And I mean, there could be a in-studio radio appearance at some point that I've talked to a radio station about doing that. So, you know, I'm not ruling out a one-off performance here or there, but there's definitely not going to be a tour.
I would say, Dave, some of us who know you well are going to strong-arm you into at least the one-off thing, because
sure,
those of us who know Dave,
I wish we could do it here at Chatter.
That would be great.
We don't have the ability to do that.
But
we could.
I mean, part of, you know, I mean, Dave is definitely underselling his ability as a performer. I mean, there's a staple of the baseball winter meetings that is Shinen finds a piano and defiles it, and it is a great, great, great show.
So you are both too young to know what I'm going to say now.
This is why I love coming on the show.
But Mitch, so young. You're too young. In the old days at Super Bowls, and maybe Dave knows this, that's what Mitch Albom would do. Mitch would get a piano. And Mitch would literally, and I kid you not on this, play until his fingers bled. And there would be a bunch of people around him, Mike Litwin and I and Alan Greenberg and Leslie Visser. And we would sing along with, and Mitch is an accomplished, right, Dave? You know that about Albom.
Yeah.
He's an accomplished musician. And this is what we would do at Super Bowls. And we would act, we would perform, even though we were terrible. Mitch was great. Everybody else was terrible. But we knew all the words. That it doesn't surprise me, Dave, that you would do that same thing. You probably have people who want to sing along with you when you play, right? You must do standards at that point, right?
Yeah, no question. There is one guy in particular, Pete Caldera, who covers the Yankees, who is a sort of Sinatra impersonator and actually performs at some clubs in New York doing his Sinatra thing. And so, yeah, we have our whole routine. And you know, I mean, I just get on the piano and beat the crap out of it until hotel management comes and shuts us down. That's the whole show.
Yeah.
It's a great show, though. And I've seen it performed worldwide, too. I think I saw it in Beijing at the Olympics as
so
well.
So when you studied music at Vanderbilt, that's in Nashville, Tennessee. There are bars all over Nashville, Tennessee that welcome live performance, which is the highlight of everybody's visit to Nashville. Did you perform in college in any of those places?
I did not. I was intimidated. I was focusing on, you know, I was studying classical music, obviously. I was training to be an opera singer at that point. I never really did much. I mean, I've dabbled, I suppose, and I played guitar and hung out with people and stuff like that. But I was really intimidated by the real Nashville music scene.
But you, I know you say you don't want to do a tour, and obviously I understand that. But you like performing, do you not? Do you? Because some people who are really good don't like it. Do you like it?
Well, there's the Barry will appreciate this. I mean, if you get a couple of drinks into me,
that's how it's going to go down there.
I don't really perform sober. I'll tell you that. I don't know, man.
Well, I'll tell you this, Dave. I could get you in at the Hare and Hounds in my hometown of Birmingham, England, tonight. You say the word, I'll get you there for a three-week gig.
Yeah. Are there baseball players who know you sing and who tell you they sing too? Have you met baseball players who sing and perform?
I mean, over the years I have. I mean, Barry Zito comes to mind, but he's long ago retired. I know, you know, Mark Trumbo with the Orioles is a big guitar guy, and we've talked guitars and gear and stuff like that. I don't know that anybody well,
Dusty Baker, man.
Yeah, Dusty Baker has seen me play piano, and there's a legendary story in the 2002 World Series where he was at the bar, the hotel bar where the Giants were staying, and saw me playing piano and tipped a $50 bill in the
because it was the night that he blew the World Series.
It was the night that he blew the World Series, Game 6. Yes.
Yes.
That's great. That's great. We wish you all the luck in the world with this.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on to talk about it.
Yeah. It's and again, it's called First Thing Tomorrow is the name of the album. But we're not letting you go because now we have to talk about baseball.
All right.
I wondered. Well, the first thing I wonder is why are the Yankees booing Stanton already, and why are the Phillies booing Gabe Kapler before he did anything? I mean, what is that about?
I mean, they've been terrible. Those guys have been terrible. I mean, that's the main reason. I mean, you know, those are tough crowds also. I mean,
yes.
You know, you're not just going to waltz into Yankee Stadium and strike out five times on the home opener and walk away unscathed. And if you're Gabe Kapler in Philadelphia, of all places, you're not going to blow up your bullpen in the first two or three games of the season and then show up in Philly and expect to get a warm reception. So, I mean, you know, you have to prove yourself in those cities.
Do you know the stat on Stanton relative to Joe DiMaggio? That after 41 at-bats, Giancarlo Stanton had struck out more times than Joe DiMaggio did in the 1941 season with 534 at-bats.
Game's a little different.
Yeah. Just amazing. So you think the booing in your mind was justified because they underperformance?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Your thoughts on... Go ahead.
It doesn't mean that they can't turn it around, obviously. I mean, Giancarlo Stanton is going to hit his homers, and Gabe Kapler, well, you know, I mean, the jury's out, of course. But,
right.
I mean, he has a chance to, you know, they have a really good core there in Philadelphia. He has a chance to turn them into a decent team. So, you know, no one's going to be releasing Stanton or firing Kapler anytime soon. That's not, you know, Kapler, you know, could get in some trouble if this keeps up, but... he's going to have a chance to win them back.
What are your thoughts on Shohei Ohtani so far?
I mean, brilliant. I mean, I was out there for his debut. I could have gone basically anywhere for opening day. You know, it was a matter of, you know, what's the biggest story in baseball on opening day 2018? And in my mind, it was Ohtani. And so, you know, I convinced the office, let's go write about him. And I mean... You know, it's been amazing. I don't think people even realize how incredible this is that, you know, we're basically talking 100 years of baseball history. Nobody has even really attempted to do what he's doing, let alone pulling it off and looking like, at times, the best hitter and the best pitcher in baseball. It's mind-blowing. And I don't think people fully realize how special this is.
Can I ask the reasonable question here, which is that baseball prospects, by and large, when they're in high school, they're the pitcher and the shortstop or the pitcher and the outfielder. Yeah. They're the best players there, and they have both of these skills. Rick Ankiel comes to mind as somebody who, in hindsight, probably could have done this, but teams don't let you do it. Will teams let kids try to do this, or will they say no?
I think the answer is yes, and I think we're already seeing it. The Tampa Bay Rays picked a kid out of Louisville last year in the draft who's a two-way player, and they're letting him do it in the minor leagues. And that's not to say, you know, Ohtani had not yet arrived in the big leagues last summer when they drafted this kid, but he was on his way, and I have to think that in some ways Ohtani's example in Japan and now in Major League Baseball – you know, has opened that door a crack. I mean, you have to, it takes a special kind of player, someone who has not just the physical ability, but sort of the mental and emotional ability to handle something like that. But I do think that if this guy succeeds in it, you're going to see teams that, especially in this day and age, Tony, where bullpens are now 13-man bullpens uniformly and you're using more pitchers every game, mm-hmm. You need those roster spots, you know, for extra relievers. And if you have a guy who can fill two jobs for you in one body, you know, you're going to have the motivation to try something like this. So I think in this day and age, it's going to be done or attempted more often. Yeah.
I don't want to make Artie Moreno and Mike Socia into Branch Rickey, and I don't want to make Ohtani into Jackie Robinson. But why hasn't this happened before? Why? What is the prejudice against it?
Well, I mean, baseball has become so specialized, and a pitcher's routine is so sacred and so regimented I mean, I think about Max Scherzer, you know, who one of the greatest pitchers on the planet, who's you know, every single day is scripted almost from dawn to dusk or dawn, you know, to 8 a.m. to midnight.
Right.
He knows exactly when he's going to lift, when he's going to run, when he's going to throw bullpens, when he's going to watch video. And there's just no time in there for even thinking about hitting, even though as a National League pitcher, he does have to hit. You know, it's so regimented and so specialized that, you know, and baseball is also a groupthink type of situation where, you know, once something becomes established, once it becomes established that nobody can be a two-way player, nobody's going to be a two-way player until somebody like Ohtani comes along.
Yeah. Thank you, Dave. Thank you. We'll talk to you
all
soon,
right,
and best of luck with selling a bunch of albums. If people want to get your album, how do they do it?
It's just about anywhere you normally find music, but the best place for me, if you want to help me out on this, is daveshinen.bandcamp.com.
Fantastic. Where I usually buy music, Tower Records doesn't exist anymore.
No, sadly.
So, thank you, David. Talk to you soon. Shinen, boys and girls. We will come back. Nigel will do the news when we return. I'm very happy for Shinen.
Yeah.
And I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Harry's ad. It asks you, what do you love most about shaving with Harry's? Love is really too strong a word. I mean, I like Harry's. You know, we have, everybody here has Harry's. We're all happy with Harry's.
Love Harry's.
This Verluga left the box here for like weeks at a time.
Then I got it,
then
he got it.
So he loves it.
I love it.
So it's great. Harry stands behind the quality of their blades, but they know that switching razors is not an easy decision, so they created a trial offer. You can claim yours by going to harrys.com/TonyK. Harry's founders were fed up with overpaying for expensive razors with unnecessary features. They knew a great shave comes down to great blades made with sharp, durable steel that lasts. It's why they bought a factory that's been making some of the highest quality blades in the world for over 95 years. By selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's can offer their blades at a price much lower than the leading brand, just $2 a blade compared to $4 or more. And they have a quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let Harry's know within 30 days. They'll give you a free refund. So you can get a $13 value trial set that comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. A weighted ergonomic handle, 5-blade razor with lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. Listeners of my show can redeem their trial set at harrys.com/TonyK. Make sure you go to harrys.com/TonyK to redeem your offer and let them know that I sent you to help support the show. And by letting them know that I sent you, I mean send something on a pigeon. Like put a little band on a pigeon,
right, carry
and
a pigeon.
Just say,
from
go
Tony.
To Harry's. Yes.
Tell him Satchmo sent you.
Go to Harry's.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent in by Jim Townsend as a loyal little. Cousin Eddie is his band.
That's right.
And he writes, we were so thrilled that you guys played our song 700 Miles. It was a real honor. We're submitting another selection. Hope you enjoy it. And Cousin Eddie is Mark McFarlane on drums and vocals, Pat O'Sullivan on guitar, Adam Paone on bass, and Jim Townsend guitar and vocals. The song is from the album All the Pieces Matter. It's available on iTunes, CD Baby, and Spotify.
Love these guys. And I think the name Cousin Eddie probably comes from Vacation, the National Lampoon's Vacation.
That's right.
But it just reminds me of the story that Barry Levinson told us yesterday. Oh, yeah, my cousin Eddie. He was the one that had the Colts quiz. And that's why we put it in the movie.
Barry Levinson. That was pretty good. When he started talking about all of those great movies that he made.
There's nothing better than the Colts quiz.
You know, I mean...
It's fantastic.
The notion that people who ran a studio didn't think Diner was any good.
Like, crazy. Well, just do whatever you're going to do.
What are they doing now? Are they in the cabinet? Because, because Diner is really great. Michael, if people like Cousin Eddie and people like Dave Shinen want to submit their music here, how do they do it?
Send your music into the show by emailing it to jingles@TonyKornheiserShow.com.
And now we've gotten our full complement of Chatter t-shirts.
There's a full many
here
boxes.
For $12.
It's a wall of boxes.
Is that just $12?
Now. Just $12.
Oh, those will sell out quickly.
On the way and
out.
If we want to sell stuff through our own brand.
Yeah, we have some great t-shirts like the Mr. Dr. Porthauser t-shirt. That is a lightweight, breathable shirt for this time of year.
Yeah.
Or the steel tumbler for when you're doing yard work.
Lightweight for this time of year?
Well, it's going to be 82.
It's going to be 80 Friday and Saturday.
Yes,
it's going to be 80. Nigel, you have news.
I do indeed, Mr. Tony, and we will start off with the association. And we don't always start off with a feel-good story, but we'll do that today. Andre Ingram,
gets called up. For the makes his debut last night for the LA Lakers after years in the
what is now the G League and was then the D League. 10 years,
and he goes off for 32 points.
This is Bull Durham. Yeah. I mean, it's 10 years.
Except it doesn't happen in basketball.
I'm sorry, 19.
It's right. 19. It does sometimes happen in baseball, and I find
he's an AU kid. Yeah. He went to American.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Why does it not happen more often in basketball?
Well, I mean, there hasn't been
smaller
until recently.
Smaller roster spots.
Hasn't been until recently. You know, baseball has the institutional minor leagues and many levels. And
they also have larger rosters September 1st on.
Yes.
You can do call-ups. Basketball doesn't have anything like that.
You got 12
that.
Guys or whatever.
And his family was there. It's great.
It's wonderful. He's got gray hair. It's fabulous.
You know, but that made me think
love the kid.
Yeah, but he's 32, right?
Yes.
That's prematurely gray. I think we
I understand, but it was it's so nice to see, and he went for 19.
Yeah.
And you know, the Lakers, this is a very nice gesture.
Yeah. And everybody sees
there's 100 guys like this that can do this.
Old Nationals fans will remember, and there's like four of them. In 2005 they called up a guy named Rick Short, who was 33 years old and had played in Japan and was going to quit. And then the Nats signed, and he came up in September and had, I mean, he was like, he raked. It was super fun to watch. And
Andre Ingram's not going to be a star, but is lovely.
It's a great story.
This is lovely.
Was that baseball movie with Dennis Quaid, The Rookie, where he finally gets his shot after the surgery?
Well, I think it's the Kevin Costner in Bull Durham, right?
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, he's the all-time.
Yeah, but he never
he was the old guy going on his way out.
He was the home run leader of all time in the minors.
And it's great when they're like, you were in the show?
Yeah.
Do they carry your bags in the show? He's telling the stories. Yeah. Look, closer to home, the Wizards won last night, 113-101 over the Boston Celtics. John Wall got 12 assists, which
He had 13. I thought it was 29 and 13.
I'm looking here from the Washington Post. It says, collected 12 assists, surpassing 5,000 for his career. Perhaps I have that wrong because I often do.
That may have been the one, but I thought he had. Look at the box.
I have it at 11, but the box.
What does the box say? Go ahead. Tell your story.
So they are still in the eighth seed spot for the playoffs, which would have them playing Toronto.
I got 13 in the box.
Oh, 13.
Yeah. I got 13 in the
then
box.
It is,
but they can go to sixth.
Yes.
They can go to sixth, and apparently, according to some very knowledgeable people, they could be the big surprise in the entire NBA.
Well, yes.
People who were there last night. Very knowledgeable.
The season and the regular season ends tonight, so they're at Orlando. Toronto is at Miami. That would be the sort of this 8-7 switch. And then Milwaukee is at Philadelphia.
So I'm settling into my routine now.
Okay.
And my routine, once baseball starts, is to watch 4 or 5 innings of baseball, then watch something else, then go to sleep. But I watch 4 or 5 innings. And I watched last night the Nats. That's what I watch. And Scherzer, who had pitched so great the night before. On a night when 3 Cy Young Award winners had great nights, including Verlander and Kluber had great nights. Scherzer had the best night.
Yes.
Because Scherzer went the classic distance. He went all 9, gave up 2 hits, struck out 10, and had no walks. He had no walks, okay? And then Strasburg, who is, and we say this a lot, but I'll defer to Barry, he's a number 2. He's not a number 1 pitcher.
He is the number 2 on this staff.
Suits him.
It suits him fine.
Yes.
It suits him fine. You put him on 18, 20, 22 other teams, he's the number 1.
Would it suit him? That's what I'm getting at.
I think, so I don't think that
we can answer. He was very good last night. 3 hits, no runs.
I don't know that we can answer that question in a vacuum because part of what has become, I've always described him as someone we don't really know personally. But I do think since he signed the extension in a move that is not very much like Scott Boras's clients to not go to free agency, to only allow one team to bid on your services, not 30, and to limit your market in a way that you're not being bid on. I think what we've learned is his comfort level here with the organization and with the city and really with a fan base and a media core that is not like Philadelphia or New York or Boston.
That's right.
That he can be that guy here. I don't know what it would be like.
I just think he really benefits by Max Scherzer.
I don't disagree with that either. That's part of the context as well. So ability-wise, if you just watch that guy pitch that game last night, or you're a hitter, and I want to go out and talk to opposing hitters right now, what is the... What's the more uncomfortable at bat? Is it Scherzer or is it Strasburg? Because both of them are hitters always talk about the unease of being in the batter's box with a guy who has so many weapons at his disposal. I just think that the Strasburg discussion is one that is different than another pitcher who is like an alpha male. Scherzer, who could probably go anywhere and be guns blazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Verlander, who was really uncomfortable leaving Detroit. The his whole career was there. Made the decision to approve the trade and then has been lights out since.
And 14 won a world, starts, 11 won a world and one.
Series. Right. Yeah. So I don't know. I think I would say this. Steven Strasburg is in a great place for him right now.
I will say that it never surprises me when Strasburg follows a great Scherzer performance with a great performance of his own. I don't know that you want to put him out there to stop the losing streak in the same way you want to put Scherzer out there.
Right. But I don't disagree with you, but the fact is, you know, that's one of the reasons I was so stunned that the Nats lost five in a row there, because they have, if Scherzer gets beat, they do Strasburg. Have another stopper. And that, it's just, it's hard to see if people are healthy that this team doesn't have a successful season, in part because of that.
Big news from Ryan Zimmerman last night, watching in the Looking bottom of the sky. First. Ryan Zimmerman, with two on, delivers something that ends up going for a triple, because, I mean, a fielder...
NCRT.
Yeah, goes for it in center field.
A little bit aggressive.
Yeah, goes under his glove.
He had two of those.
And ends up a triple. And when Zimmerman, who had stranded 5 million people so far, got to third, he literally put both hands up and looked up to the heavens to say thanks on that, and got his batting average all the way up to 114. But that was the key hit.
That was the
hit.
This
is two nights in a row. I know I go on about the Nats. Two nights in a row that you gave their pitchers enough in the first.
Right.
In the first, you gave them enough.
And Zimmerman, to me, is such a key to that lineup, because when Murphy comes back, if he is what he should be, the legitimate number four hitter, doesn't mean he has to hit 40 bombs. Then you get that nice left-right, left-right.
That's right. Yeah. But you need Zimmerman to be better than he's been.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd also say watching Strasburg and Scherzer hit the last two nights makes you realize why the NL is so much fun, including that key walk.
Strasburg has hit his whole career.
Accepted.
He
Strasburg's a pretty good hitter.
Yes.
He's a pretty good hitter.
He is.
Also, it makes you think.
But to your earlier point, I think he's – I know nothing about baseball, but I know something about the psychology of all of this. He's much more comfortable not being in the spotlight.
I agree
with
that.
He shunned it when he first came on the scene, right?
That's what I think. But you know him better than I.
But I don't know him. You know, I mean, that's part of the...
Well, you've been around.
I've definitely been around.
And maybe he likes it that way.
No. I don't disagree with that. I'm just saying the entire thing, there's the Scherzer element, there's the Washington element, there's where he is in his life and his career. Yeah. It's a whole package with him that right now is kind of perfect.
And one of the reasons...
He certainly doesn't seek the limelight.
Right, but I bet one of the reasons he likes to hit is there aren't expectations that he's going to hit a home run every time, so there's less pressure, and he has fun with it.
I think he's going to have a huge year.
Now, I was watching the Yankees-Red Sox game.
How did Stanton do against Sale? How did Judge do against Sale, who strikes out every time?
Judge did well. He has not done well against the Red Sox in general. It was like 3 for 36 or something like coming to the game.
He was 0 for 12 against Sale career 10 Ks.
He hit one to dead center. I mean, the Red Sox crushed them, but he hit one to dead center.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was the only run.
14-1?
Yeah.
They're 9-1.
And I was watching.
They're pretty good. Yeah, Houston's pretty good, too.
Houston's very good. Yeah, Mets and the Angels are playing well.
Yeah.
I was thinking, though, with Sale, and we talked about Scherzer yesterday, now with Strasburg, if you had one guy on the, you know, you got to win that one game of all the pitchers today, would it be Kershaw? Would it be Scherzer? Would it be Sale? Who
wouldn't
would it be
Sale anytime after June.
Right.
Because you can chart when Sale gets gassed, because he's Nerlens Noel. He weighs 130 pounds.
Thin reed, yeah.
So it's not, it is him
Scherzer.
Early.
I think it's Scherzer.
Think it's Scherzer?
Yeah, I mean, and he doesn't have a clean postseason
record.
Well,
I think it's Verlander or Scherzer.
I don't think it's Verlander at this point in his career. I think it's Scherzer. And remember, they were on the same staff,
those
two guys.
Remarkable.
With, who was the big kid that was with them, too, that came to the Nats for a year and had one great year?
Doug Fister.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he was more of a sleight of hand guy.
So anyway,
keeping it close to home, I mean, this is something you were very excited about. The Capitals begin their march towards the Stanley Cup tomorrow night against the Columbus Blue Jackets. And if they're going to win, they're going to win with Philip Grubauer. Is it Gruby? Grubsy? What's his nickname?
Gruby.
Gruby. There you go.
It's a Gruby kind of love.
It's a exactly. Thank you. He will be the goaltender.
Well, he'll be the goaltender in game one.
This is not a surprise to anyone.
No.
He'll be the goaltender in game one. If he gives up five, he will not be the goaltender in game two.
That's correct.
And you need to ask yourself, there's a great quote here from Braden Holtby, who was a very, very wonderful goalie for 3 or 4 years.
And in the regular season. In the regular season.
Yeah, in the regular season. Well, that's true for everything with the Caps. But I wanted to get this. This is Holtby after talking about the decision that was made by Barry Trotz. As we know, the greatest hockey coach of all time,
well,
Barry Trotz.
Stanley Cups.
Can't believe that he hasn't won as many Stanley Cups as, say,
Scotty Bowman.
Yeah, hard to believe. This is Holtby. It's a coach's decision who plays or not. It doesn't have anything to do with me. No, it has everything to do with you.
A little bit to do with
the only reason this has come up is you.
Yes.
You. How do people, when those words come out of an athlete's mouth, don't the athletes know this is nonsense?
I want to sign up as Holtby's media trainer because in the playoffs last year, he admitted on the record, acknowledged on the record that there was no pressure, there was no curse on the Caps, etc.
What?
But wait, he acknowledged that a few days before he had spent 6 hours on the phone with his sports psychologist.
Yes.
Who says
in
these
Western
things?
Canada.
Right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
He needs a little help on the media training.
So,
I think that there is a lot of pressure on, you know, this Hall of Fame coach whose contract is up at the end of the year. I think if they do not advance, he's out. I think that's as simple. I'm going out there directly from here to the Capitals, and we'll be at games 1 and 2. So looking forward to that.
More troubles for James Gatto. Federal prosecutors in New York added a couple more criminal counts to the indictment of the Adidas executive, alleging for the first time that he conspired to give cash payments to the families of former basketball players at Kansas and NC State.
One of them seems to be Dennis Smith Jr.
It has to be.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only player that NC State's had that's worth paying.
That's right. These are, NC State's a pretty big school with a great history, not as much now as they used to be. Kansas is a dominant. No, it's true, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
NC State's still a big school. Huh. Kansas is a top five.
Top five, for sure.
Kansas is a top five school. The coaches will tell you, well, they're not talking about us, but they're talking about somebody.
Yep.
Something happens somewhere. Mm-hmm. If you take the position, as Barry Levinson does, that Joe Paterno had to know something over those years, it is hard for me to believe that Bill Self, who I like very much, who has been there a long time, that he knows nothing about this. And as a corollary story, Jim Larrañaga, whose school, Miami, is involved in the same probe, just got an extension.
Right.
Got a contract extension. So I guess this is the school saying, don't even come to me with this junk. Except Louisville got rid of a guy. Jim Larrañaga, last time I looked, has not won a national championship.
Nope.
No.
Rick Pitino has won a national championship. Rick Pitino is one of the greatest basketball coaches ever. Ever. And Louisville cashed him out, you know, got rid of him. I don't know what this is.
Well, I mean, it's surprising to me. I thought that we were at the point where the investigation was going to kind of crumble because, as Larrañaga's people say, they haven't charged him with anything.
Yeah, what do you got?
I'm in limbo here, and Pitino is saying the same thing. I don't buy the I know nothing defense because we've been hearing this stuff for so long that it is their jobs to know this stuff.
Don't know.
But I was surprised at this next step because I thought this thing was just going to kind of fizzle and they weren't going to be able to charge people.
So you got anything else or is that enough?
Just a quick word. A friend of the show, Bill Simmons, had his documentary on Andre the Giant on HBO last night.
Ringer Productions.
Yes.
Simmons, who is my friend, my personal friend, who was down in Augusta with his dad, took his dad to Augusta for a couple of days, told me that he had spent a lot of quality time with Wilbon, had a good time with Wilbon. Wilbon everywhere, of course, at all times.
I didn't see him.
Yeah, at all times. Andre the Giant came out last night. Bill, very proud of this. Came out at 10 o'clock. I can get it.
It's a little late.
I can get it on demand.
Right.
Which is what I'm going to do. He was very excited about doing this, and I hope it's really good.
I think this is a project he's had his eye on doing for a
long
time.
Really good. It's really good. That's all right. So we will get out of here now, and we will have Old Guy Radio when we come back. I will tell a story or two about my travels, trains and planes and things like that. And because Barry is here, we will talk about the Masters and Patrick Reed, the sort of weirdness of Patrick Reed that I think you're probably up to speed on, and I'm not. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio. This is Francis Albert Sinatra and Strangers in the Night, which we play for Tori Tori loves the Doobie Doobie Doo, right?
I love it. And it's been covered so well by so many different people and cartoon characters. It holds up so well.
I don't particularly like this song. Why are we playing this?
Because it was recorded on this day in 1966.
Okay, so that is 52 years ago. This was sort of... Frank Sinatra had two distinct careers. He was, in terms of critical commentary, he was an idol of millions in the way that Elvis Presley and the Beatles later became idols of millions. They were called Bobby Soxers at the time in the 1940s. Then he became, and if you believe the Godfather story, then he became, through great connections, an actor of tremendous consequence.
Like Johnny
and then he became, then he became a singer again. When he was on top of the world, he decided I'll sing again and was the preeminent singer in the entire world. This was at the latter part where he did songs like this and Something Stupid with his daughter Nancy. I always felt that the best song from this iteration of his career was It Was a Very Good Year.
Oh,
I think that's a great song. But fantastic. We played this for you because
Thank you.
Like the Doobie Doobie
Doo. But you know, it's interesting what you're saying about him. He went into all the other areas and was quite successful in them.
Very.
But not the impact on music that, say, the Beatles or Elvis Presley had. Think about that.
Well, he did at the beginning of his career.
Okay, but over the long haul.
I mean, he was the first sort of teen idol in American music, I would say.
I'm going to sit this one out.
Yeah, because you but you have heard.
Oh, you've heard of Frank Sinatra.
But I have nothing to contribute here. Yes.
Okay, no, it's okay.
Absolutely.
To put a period on this, Sinatra won the Grammy Award for Best Male Pop Vocal Performance for that.
Yeah, also won
the Grammy Award for the Record of the Year. It was a massive hit for him.
It was, as was My Way, it was a very
good
year.
I looked at some of the other songs that were up for Grammys that year, and I was like, shouldn't the Beatles have won, like, everything?
Yeah, but the Beatles don't. The Beatles didn't win.
I think McCartney won something for Eleanor Rigby that year.
Which
is a brilliant song.
Big question. FS, good initials for a license plate.
Fantastic initials for a license plate, because you've got them. FS is very good, Frank Sinatra. So I said I would talk about my transportation on this trip. And I have not said this out loud, which I should. I always have made fun of Chan for not inviting me to South Carolina over the Christmas break. But he and Moni did invite me and were fabulous hosts to have me for a few days in South Carolina, for which I am very grateful. And I had to get on an airplane to do it, which I did with Michael and with Liz and baby boy Bootsy. And my great appreciation to Kent Powell at American Airlines for helping me. Right, Michael? We enjoyed very good service to get us onto the plane. Met the pilots. I like to meet the pilots. Everything was fine. Everything was going so well.
Until?
Everything was going so
well. This is DCA direct to Charleston?
Yes. Okay. This was the 1230 flight or 1245 flight.
Yeah, only in the air for about 50 minutes.
Right. Yeah. And everything was going so well. As we left the gate, we're on the plane, we're backing away, and then we stop. We just stop.
Stopping's not good.
We make no movement for 15 minutes.
Yeah,
I don't want to say anything, but I'm sort of churning inside. We stop.
Well, finally, you look to me because I can't see out of my window, and you say, we're going back to the gate.
Yes, because people, like actual humans, began to come over with the headsets on. This is not a good sign. And they came over, and indeed, and people would scoff at me, oh, he's negative. But no, we went back to the gate.
Really?
Oh, we went back to the gate, and we were deplaned.
Oof.
Okay, so now deplaning means something to others, but what deplaning means to me is get me a cab. I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done.
I'm
out of here.
Yeah.
I cannot go through this. We were deplaned, and there was some talk.
Verb.
It was a mechanical problem. It was a valve
problem,
issue.
Not a word you want to hear.
Valve issue.
A backup to a backup valve.
And tell us what the options were and how I behaved.
Well, the options, they were going to try and solve the problem, and they would have to take up the flooring to do so, which they did
this
not want other
airplane.
Passengers to know.
This is the airplane I'm going to fly
so
on!
So if option A is successful, we're probably getting back on the plane in an hour, 2 hours, but
four,
we're still going
eight,
out that day, that afternoon.
Maybe.
Option two is they have to bring in a new plane because this one's going to the junkyard.
Right.
I then, always vote for new plane. When there's a technical problem.
No, because what is then in play is, we'll rebook you for tomorrow.
Yeah.
I am not.
And at that point,
the concept of tomorrow. I'm done.
Yeah,
they're going. I've bought the tickets.
Yeah.
I'm done. I'm not doing it. They fixed it.
So they claim.
Well, I'm here. They fixed it, and we were out within 2 hours. Maybe
it was,
less.
It was a 25-minute delay.
How much did you drink at the bar while you're waiting?
Yeah, zero. I can't be incapacitated. There are things I have to do. There are amulets I have to touch. There are routines I have to do. Flight was great. There was no bumps. It was fine. It was great. We landed. Everything was great. But this is the continuation of problems for me. If you'll remember, I took a train back from New York City a few weeks ago, and they had to bring in another train, and that was an hour and a half. There are delays. I believed, and I know this is so self-centered.
Oh, really?
And self-aggrandizing. But I believe that somebody at American said, we got this guy here. Can you fix this?
Get
him out of here.
Do it now.
Get him in the air.
Really?
Get him in the air.
Well, I hope they did.
We were nervously pacing the concourse right outside of the gate area.
People came
and it's
to
opening
see us.
Day. So we're all sharing scores. We're hanging
people
out with
came
a,
to see us.
Kent
with a, came and,
with a
and
Cubs
Ryan
fan.
Came, yeah.
Dad is going from the little kiosks that have the plugs for your cell phone. He doesn't know how to actually use these, so he's leaving
Wi-Fi
around the entire area. But I think traveling with Bootsy calmed you down a little bit.
That is great. Bootsy was great.
Really?
Yes, Bootsy was great.
Entertainment value?
Apparently, Bootsy had not as good a flight home. But
no, he's now at a size where he's a little bit too big to sit comfortably in one of our laps. But our big fear was sitting in the airport for a couple hours with a baby. You're all of a sudden bringing in diaper issues, food issues. But when we got back on the plane, now we're sitting at the front of the plane.
Not
Bootsy was just bouncing.
We're not in the village,
no. He's bouncing in my lap, smiling and essentially waving at everyone as they come back on. Because in the concourse, all the other passengers were looking to Tony for updates.
Yeah, the pilots were great. One of them was a Kansas University graduate, by the way, and had been there. You know, and meeting the pilots for me is the
That's
best.
Very important.
It's the best.
Well, really?
You know? Yes.
I think we've got a new business idea there. So traveling with Bootsy really calmed you down.
A little
How about
bit.
Service babies instead of service animals.
Service peacock.
Yeah. Now I'm not going to yet tell you about the train ride home, which also encountered some difficulty.
But that was your own doing. You're to blame for the train.
I wasn't late.
I opted for that option.
I did. Instead of driving home. I got to tell you about my rent-a-car. Oh, this is great.
It's a sweet ride.
I get a rent-a-car, and I've arranged. Tina has arranged for me to get an SUV. The largest SUV that ESPN allows you to get is not that large. I had asked for like a Yukon or big. Not a Suburban, but like a Yukon.
Because
I got,
SUV?
You know, I got golf clubs. I got the baby. I got all of these things. But I didn't get that. So this was Enterprise on site.
Sure.
Not we'll pick you up Enterprise. Right. Enterprise on site. And I used to rent cars a long time ago. And you would know a long time ago what kind of car you were going to get. It wasn't so much that you could walk down the aisle and say, I'll take that one. No, they told you, and you knew. And, you know, that was it. In the days of Oldsmobiles, you got the Oldsmobile Cutlass. That's how it worked. And it was fine. It was fine. I had no problem. Rent-a-cars in the old days never had more than 10,000 miles. The thing I had like 28,000 miles.
That's a lot for a rental car.
So I am told, That's your car over there. That's your car. This is in Charleston, South Carolina. It is a bright red car.
Cherry red.
It is a bright red car, which you don't want.
No.
It is a bright red Dodge, which you don't want. And it's got Alabama plates.
Wow.
Alabama plates. And I'm thinking, they're laughing. They're saying, this is Jew from New York. Give him this one. Give him this one. Now it ran good. It ran good, right?
Yeah.
You drove it. You drove it to and from Augusta, but I wasn't going to take it to 6 hours.
It was a little bit more it was a louder car than I would have preferred on the
Dodge.
Back roads going through South Carolina.
Right. You know, with ram power, you know, something.
3 miles to the gallon.
Something like through that. Not many miles to the gallon. So we take the trip to Augusta. I think I mentioned this the other day.
Yes.
We take the trip to Augusta. But Michael reminds me of one thing that happened to us. And we were in this, it's called
Berkman's Place.
Berkman's Place, which used to be the nursery. That was the actual nursery where
the azaleas were grown and all that kind of stuff, yes.
So now it's this fantastic,
it's a corporate,
you know, sort of
tent.
It's the Roman baths of Caligula.
Correct.
It's beautiful. And it's beautiful, but it's a little overdone, maybe. A little
it's
overdone.
Augusta.
Yeah. But it's really nice. It's really nice when you can sit there. So Michael and I are shopping to buy some things, and somebody says to me, there's Scotty Cameron over there. Okay. So I know who I don't know what he looks like, but Scotty Cameron is probably the most famous designer of putters ever.
I don't think there's a probably.
Right? He is. He's the guy, Scotty Cameron. And Michael, I remember getting Michael a putter when he was in high school, a Scotty Cameron putter. And Tori is now looking up Scotty Cameron, C-A-M-E-R-O-N.
I know how to spell it.
So there are two guys. There are two guys who are standing there. One of them's wearing one of them's about 6'2 or 6'3. Grayish hair, wearing a hat. He's engaged in a conversation. There's a guy to his left, shorter than he is, a little bit squatter, but trim. But, you know, there's one guy who looks big and one guy who looks, you know, he's the other guy who's with him. I walk up to the big guy because I can do this because I'm Tony Kornheiser and I'm unafraid. I'm nervous about it, but I'm unafraid. And I reach out and I say, hi, I'm Tony Kornheiser. And he says, I'm Mike somebody or other. Well, I thought he was Scotty Cameron. But he's very pleasant. And that meant by elimination that the other guy had to be Scotty Cameron. And Scotty Cameron himself is engaged in a conversation with a young woman about something or other in golf. And I patiently wait and patiently wait and patiently wait because I say to Michael, do you want to meet Scotty Cameron? Because I figure I can do this. And I introduce myself to him. Zero recognition.
Oh, interesting.
Absolute zero recognition.
I don't think he's a sports fan.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might be right.
Zero.
That doesn't happen to you very often.
Not in the sports world.
Right.
No, absolutely zero recognition. And I say, I just wanted to tell you that my son's been using your putters, you know, since he was in high school. And then you
go ahead, ask him anything.
Yeah, right. He knows all the numbers. He knows the handicap.
I was so embarrassed by this interaction because I fangirled in front of Scotty Cameron, who was such a minor person in the overall world of the sport. So he changed. So original equipment manufacturers, Titleist, Callaway, all of them, they always make their own equipment. He was the first guy that came in as a branded, almost like support antenna extension of the brand because their name is bigger than thou.
Correct.
Same thing with like Bob Vokey. You see this now with Bettinardi. So I used his putter in high school. They've become collector items. They've become, I'd say, over-celebrated in some circles. But I actually fangirled in front of him saying, I really like that Newport Beach. You got to bring back that sound slot. And he just looks at me and goes, yeah, sound slot. Great.
Yeah, that was
okay, well,
it was almost like a Matthew McConaughey moment.
Sure.
Yeah, we'll see how fangirl you are. What's his real name?
Oh, I don't know that.
Don T. Scotty Cameron. I don't know where you get
Dawn,
Scotty. Don? D-O-N.
Oh, Don.
Middle initial T. I don't know where you get Scotty.
Right.
According to Wikipedia, so it must be true, he's got two daughters, Summer Lynn and Sandra Dawn.
Wow.
How old is he?
I would say he's in his mid-50s. I would have taken that guess.
I would guess 58.
55.
Okay. Yeah. But he was pleasant, but, you know, he was not overly pleasant because I guess he gets this 100 times a day.
Yeah, but, I mean,
especially
let's be real. This is golf is a niche world, and Scotty Cameron is a niche celebrity in a niche world.
Yeah.
To the Michael Kornheisers of the world, this is a fangirl situation.
I respectfully disagree because I know nothing about golf, but the fact that I know
you've heard
who
the
Scotty Cameron is.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
I'm underselling
it. I think it's a big
it.
Deal.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think that he.
I mean, I have an Odyssey.
You
card.
Know how Carsten Ping was a big deal?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah. This is. He's
Solheim.
Yeah, I think he's a big deal.
So when he saw you, he wasn't like, the Dr. Kornheiser?
He had no idea who I was, and I think he thought I was a mouth breather. Yeah, I do. I actually
Oh,
do.
Really?
You were in Augusta. Just tell us about Patrick Reed.
Well, I mean,
what's the deal?
So a couple
things. Because he's a great competitor.
Great competitor and established American Ryder Cup hero. And, I mean, the match and Hazeltine.
He's beat him twice now. He's taken McElroy on and trounced him.
But it was really, there's a couple things that were striking. I mean, as we've talked about a million times in covering the Masters, you cannot watch the back nine on the course if you're writing about the thing. But I try to walk in the, as they're teeing off, and walk as much of the front nine as you can. And it was striking when those two players were introduced. Patrick Reed hit
McElroy
first, and there was tepid applause, and they went crazy for Rory, and everybody was pulling for Rory.
And Patrick Reed played in that city and won two national championships.
I'm sorry, you tweeted about this, because remember McElroy, I don't know what day it was, but McElroy said the thing about he's the home, Patrick Reed's the hometown guy, I'm just going to try to mess up his party, and then you pretty soon thereafter, right after they started that day, tweeted out and said, this is not a Patrick Reed crowd.
And I get you're right about, okay, he played at Augusta State, but that's not like playing basketball at North Carolina and being in Chapel Hill. I mean, this is a little, people don't go out and get behind the program. He's accomplished there. He helped them win two national championships for a program that doesn't do that kind of thing. So that's a thing. But he is an island. He is, it says something about Jordan Spieth that he agreed to and embraced the partnership with him at these team events because Spieth is so kind of upright and well-spoken and will say the right things. It speaks well of his him as a teammate because he realizes no one else wants to play with this guy.
Is that right?
It's weird. He doesn't play practice rounds. I mean, even Tiger and Phil played a practice round together. I mean, there could be peace in the Middle East now, right? So, but Reed is, he's his own entity. He has this weird situation with his family in which apparently the his parents didn't like the idea of him getting married at 22 and aren't big fans of the wife. And so he's been estranged from his family, even as he, at age 27, has two kids who his own parents have never met. So,
well, they've never met.
That's what's been reported, yes. So they are, ooh. Yeah, it's a, and no one knows what the, you don't want to speculate about why that, that doesn't mean Patrick Reed's a bad person, doesn't mean, but there's some sort of falling out with the family. And that's a big thing.
He's a really good player.
He's gonna be in this position in the future. He has game. I mean, he has real game and real grit. I mean, I hate that term, but every time he gets the lucky break on 13, he does not make birdie where you kind of have to make birdie. And what does he do? He comes back and birdies 14, which is a harder hole to make birdie on. That kind of stuff he did all week.
But he's not liked.
Nope, he's not.
Not liked by his fellows.
But, you know,
Bubba,
it's funny.
Bubba liked that, right? Bubba not liked?
Bubba is not liked, but in a different, I think Bubba has, you know, Ricky Fowler would call himself a friend of Bubba. Bubba is an odd character. But there's a distinction between not liked and not worthy, and no one out there thinks that Patrick Reed is not worthy of winning a major.
But they seem to, I mean, you say he's not a bad person. Who are we to sit here and say who's
a
good person? But I don't know. I started reading a lot about it over this weekend, and there seems to be a long, good body of work of reporting on him from when he was in high school, when he was in college,
yes.
Georgia versus Augusta State.
Stud prospect.
These kinds of things. Nobody likes him. And is his game going to be good enough to overcome that?
I see, but here's why it will be. And I'm not saying he's going to go on and win majors because that's a very, very difficult thing to do. And Phil Mickelson is one of the greatest players of all time and has five. But I do not think he cares. And whether he is painted as a loner or painted as a bad guy, he's got his world. He fits into his world. And I just don't think that stuff will bother him.
But he certainly wants to play on American teams.
Oh, I mean, he pulls out. It starts raining on Saturday. What does he pull out? A Ryder Cup umbrella. Yeah. I mean, that's a big thing for
him. The timing was perfect for him as well because he got involved into the American side of the Ryder Cup after years and years of losing, and it really is able to hide a lot of those stories that had been percolating about his college days.
I'll just ask this one last question because Michael and I felt this way, that after a few holes, not many holes, that Rory McIlroy didn't want any part of him and wanted to be off the course.
So to me, Rory made a great save at one, and
yes, he did.
And Reed makes bogey, and now a three-shot game is a two-shot game, and Rory hits it stiff
and
at
misses,
number two,
misses the putt.
And he did birdie, and he moved forward, and it was a one-shot lead after two holes. But that you knew right then, he needs to. That was a 4.5, 5-foot putt. He needs to go jugular there. Now we're tied. We got 16 holes. Who's going in what direction? And when Rory didn't do that, that was a little opening.
All right, we will take a break. We will come back. We have emails, right? And we have a jingle. When we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
T-shirts, $12. That's not that much. As for mugs, those two we'll sell to you. We do give stuff away, lots of stuff away. Breakfast won't come cheap, the littles have to pay. T-shirts, ooh, t-shirts.
The great Brad Weiss from Williamsburg, Virginia. We did give stuff away today. We gave CDs out from the Big Easy Playboys today. That's everybody right. Who was here got one, and if you show up tomorrow, we will give you stuff as well. Before we get to the mailbag, let me thank Dave Shinen for coming on the show today and wish him all the luck in the world with his album.
Yes.
Also like today, thank today's sponsors, Harry's Razors and SeatGeek. Excuse me. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show, wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. I always get where I need to.
So Tony is taking a sip of water right now.
Take water in order to do the mailbag. From John Mann in Rockville, Maryland. I was lucky enough to check another item off my bucket list by spending Friday through Sunday at the Masters. Other than the incredible organizational prowess of Augusta National and my brother Michael's unhealthy obsession with Justin Rose, the way the patrons treated Reed was the most memorable part of the weekend. On Sunday, we camped out at the end of the 13th fairway near the green. As each pairing came in, every golfer was greeted with at least polite applause. When Reed's second shot hung up in the rough and didn't roll into the creek, there were audible groans. When McIlroy and Reed walked up to the green, Rory, walking ahead, was loudly greeted with enthusiastic cheering and encouragement. Reed was greeted with silence. Every positive change of the scoreboard throughout the day by Fowler, Spieth, and Rahm was cheered, and Reed's were booed. It wasn't until the walk up to the 17th green that the patrons began to applaud Reed, but it seemed like they were applauding the performance, not the man. For an American to be so clearly and universally disfavored was, to me, the story of the tournament. I don't know how much this was apparent on TV. I would say none apparent on TV. But on the course, it was blindingly obvious. They wanted anyone else, sort of how the Littles treat Saliza.
I mean, that's what I felt. That's what I saw, absolutely.
Wow. Jason Thompson, Lexington, South Carolina. Quick story from Augusta. After eating a delicious Masters pimento cheese sandwich right next to the fairway on the third hole while seated, I decided to lay down on my back to stretch. No sooner was I down, maybe 30 seconds, I was greeted by a guard who politely said, "Augusta National would prefer for its patrons not to recline on the grass." I apologized and quickly snapped to my feet. I felt guilty for inadvertently disrespecting the tournament. My back, on the other hand, would have given the TK salute. So, I
no,
guess.
No, I'm with Augusta National on this.
Yeah, you don't want people laying down.
Down, yeah.
Sit up, come on.
The
from
Masters.
Mike Roseberry in Draconian. State College, Pennsylvania. So Patrick Reed is pudgy, grating, and disliked. Can we get a DNA test to see if he and Saliza were separated?
Oh, come on.
From Chris Cavanaugh in Cincinnati. Please send the word out that I will wear a Lachisery sign on my shirt while running the Boston Marathon
next Monday.
Wow.
Oh,
any little spectating on Patriots Day are encouraged to greet me with a hearty Lachisery, to which I will respond with a TK salute. I look forward to the in-depth PTI Boston Marathon preview on Friday and the live race recap Monday evening. Sure. Assuming I'm done by 5:30 and not yet too deep into the post-race adult beverages, I'm happy to join as your race correspondent. Have your people talk to my people to set it up. At a minimum, a shout-out would be amazing. It's from Chris Cavanaugh. We are rooting for Chris Cavanaugh.
Oh, absolutely.
Let's see if we can get in touch with him. From Laura Cohn in Alexandria, Virginia. Tony is killing me with this Monopoly thing. Tell us what pieces you are missing. Littles can open them and send the missing pieces. Similar to the guy in Willy Wonka who had a factory full of workers opening candy bars for a golden ticket. Why is Mr. Tony doing all the work? This is one time when send me a box that is not helpful. It is not. Every night I'm opening these things.
He's missing the winning one.
Louis B. Russell writes, and where is he from? Oh, Mount Pleasant, Iowa. I will be running my second Boston Marathon on Monday. Please tell the littles who might be spectators to make a sign that says Cheesery. We'll be listening to a few of your shows on the run to pass the time. Isn't that nice? From Stephen Halter, Steve the Sycophant, Grandpa Dr. Hoffwaff Satchmo, my liege and idol. Michael's story of your adventures on an isolated South Carolina highway took me back to a college search with my son Ed. We'd done a northern swing and then headed for Georgia Tech. At some point in South Carolina, we pulled off the road for lunch and followed signs to a barbecue place. We soon realized there was a church at every corner.
Yes,
every
town. Yeah, it's totally true.
Every town. We tallied all the Protestant denominations, including five or six different types of Baptist plus Catholic and Mormon churches. We didn't see a synagogue, but the local 7-Eleven did carry bagels, which I thought gave some interdenominational hope. Ed ended up in William and Mary, but the trip was a good reminder that some sections of the USA take religion very seriously. Keep on potting. From Dr. Tom O'Brien in Rockville, Maryland, it seems like every time I'm home in Yonkers, a truck gets stuck in one of the really short bridges in the Westchester Parkway system. I think it happens more today than when I was growing up. Everyone in New York knew trucks were banned on these roads. Most of these were Depression-area work projects. They were built for Model Ts. They're really tight, especially in the bridges. I drive a huge Tundra pickup, and I have to be careful not to go through these bridges with another car. I think commercial drivers today blindly use GPS on their phone. I was reading an article on the Southern State crash that you discussed, and the police said the driver was indeed using non-commercial GPS. The signs say no commercial traffic. You're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always. Do wear white.
I'm going to solve. All right. Corno Curl Cabinet.
No. No. No, you're an idiot.
news everywhere. It's been a warm February. The dog said something strange. The air feels mean and electric, like something's permanently changed. They're all warm these days. Skinner song.